I've enjoyed playing here. This has been over 20 years that I've been coming to Royal Melbourne. This way golf should be played.
We love coming down under.
Look, it's phenomenal to play. The quality of the golf's been great, but the enthusiasm of the people has been the thing that's just been amazing.
Tier of courses that I'm willing to shave my neck for in Kingston Heath and Victoria. Get me out of bed to shave.
Especially somewhere like Australia in the Sand Belt, and I have so many great memories of being down there.
Welcome back to Australian Golf Passport. Got an episode we're really excited about tonight. Matty Mollica, as always, joins me. Good to chat to you, Matty. It's been a while.
G'day, Scott. It has been. I think I'm looking forward to this episode just as much as any of our listeners. We're revisiting a theme that we first discussed in probably episode one or two and somehow managed to drift away from, but going to venture back to that, hopefully with a good deal of success and a good deal of enjoyment along the way this evening. So.
Look, I think the forward course reviews I've come up with are good. It remains to be seen whether you or the listeners agree with me. But, yeah, it was mentioned to both of us recently that we'd kind of stopped doing them, and there was a little group of listeners who'd quite enjoyed them. And I thought, what better way to get back on the horse than we also haven't really talked about the latest Golf Australia magazine rankings, which, of course, we're both on the panel for. Some interesting stuff came out of that rankings, and just some interesting talking points about golf in this country. So, work through the top 20, maybe a few honourable mentions, do some forward course reviews and just have a bit of a chat. But first, we've got a little bit of catching up to do. Obviously, we're going to chat a little bit about our two favourite topics, Angus and Grace and Burnley. But, mate, how have you been? What's news?
I've been well. I've been progressing through the goals for 2024. Had an amazing session at the gym 2 weeks ago and hit my target number for 2024 in terms of total weight lifted for the session. So I'm not sure if I need to reevaluate that and perhaps set a little bit more of a stretch goal.
That's huge.
Yeah, very surprised by that. Added it up on the walk home and thought, holy cow, it's not March, not the end of March, and I've done it. So I'll have to reevaluate there. How are you amazing. Going with your books and your swimming?
Well, so I was going to say, you've already hit your 2024 goal for weights. I would like to dob myself in that I haven't even had a single swim yet.
Okay.
And look, still time. Work's been hectic. There's been some important golf to be played. I've got excuses. How much time do you have? I haven't had a swim. I have dumped some weight, though, which I think that's going to help me in terms of getting faster. But... so I think I'm going to have to do some swimming if I want to get to 30. Great. And also, the paragraph of Spirit of St. Andrews that I'd read when I last boasted about starting the book is currently where my bookmark sits. So,
okay.
I'm not thriving.
You have been playing some important golf, and you have been playing some very good golf.
Yeah. So that's where I've been focusing my efforts on meeting goals. We mentioned in the last episode that kind of an interim goal I hadn't considered when we set the goal, or when I set the goal of making match play in the New South Club Champs, was New South Wales Cup, basically a field of one markers and below, and I was playing off 4.8 at that point. So got into the field just on the basis that we were hosting and some choppers from our club got to play. And I kind of had a goal, I said to you, I think, when we did the Chalmers episode, of to make match play, to make the cut, which was after 36 holes, top 60 out of 84 in the field made the cut. And I actually made the cut on the number. So I was stoked about that. It was really pretty dicey weather. I played with a one marker and a two marker, and I won my group both days before the cut. So that was great. That was like little victories. Made the cut, and then I think on the final day the stroke average was somewhere around 84 and a bit, and I shot 82. So I jumped up to T46.
Very good.
I was stoked.
You'd said to Kerry that you're probably going to be busy Thursday, Friday, but then obviously had to send the message and say, hang on, that has extended to Saturday.
Yeah. Well, that was the thing. I told her it was a two-day tournament because my expectation of – like there was zero expectation of making the cut. But there we go. Did well. But then my goal that I had at the start of the year was to make match play in the club champs. So one round down, one to go, top 16 make match, and I'm T13 at an 81 on Saturday. I've been benefited or helped out quite a bit by the fact that our 14th hole is currently getting some work done ahead of the big reno, and three of our pennant team were playing together and they teed off the wrong tee. Oh. So that's a DQ, baby.
That's not two strokes. So that's out.
That's out, which is so like, basically the blue tee was over in the fairway playing as a par three and they put us off the ladies tee for the champs. And yeah, that group just missed that and walked past that tee and played it as a par three and they're out. And that includes Zach Mullins, who is like the daddy of New South Wales Golf Club. He's off like plus 70, wins everything. It's a big one. So look, it might be like the PGA Tour fields not having Taylor Gooch. Like there might be an asterisk if I make match play.
Well, yeah, you've
you know. So good. But legitimately there might be an asterisk. But you can only beat you can only beat who you can beat, and here we are. So everyone's absolutely gutted, obviously, for all three blokes. But yeah. So anyway, T13, what is it? Wednesday night, playing on Saturday. We shall see.
Yeah. Okay. Good luck.
I'm down to 3.3 from 5.2 at the start of the year. So that's going well.
Excellent.
But yeah, basically none of my other goals. Yeah, handicap goal was to get back under four and stay under four. So okay. I mean it's March, but and I've got six more. I'm in that situation where I've got, I think it's out of my next eight rounds, there's one flag. And from memory, it's not even a particularly good flag. So I'm in that kind of so if I can get lower, maybe I just don't play any more comp the whole rest of the year. And then I'll stay under four, meet my goal. Yeah, the two sweetest words in the English language, default. You've been playing a bit of golf too. You've been channeling Scotty Scheffler in your beautiful earth tones that Scotty's so hot right now on the golf course in as far as ability, and you're so hot right now in your Angus and Grace just in terms of style, mate.
Not hard to do wearing the Angus and Grace. I got a lot of messages once that picture went up. Couldn't help myself but draw the comparison with the white polo, the white accessories, and the sort of tobacco-y green coloured pants. Of course, I did it with shorts, and that was the topic of most messages that came through to me. Not the comparison of colours, or not you're a style guru, Matt, or these guys are following you, but what are you doing in shorts?
I can see your calves.
Yeah. So. But yeah, impressive from Scotty, back to back, API and players. Closer to home, we had the BMW tournament at the National over the weekend, which was really good to watch.
Well, so before we get on to the National, let's just say angusandgracegogolfing.com, Angus and Grace Go Golfing on Instagram, Angus and Grace Go Golfing in William Street, Paddington, and then thus constitutes the ad read. But yeah. I did want to talk about Moona because it looked awesome on TV.
It really did. Their ground staff had done a power of work in presenting the course, and it's always cool to see a course on TV that you're really, really familiar with, both in terms of understanding where you put the ball and where professionals put the ball, how far they can drive, how they negotiate tricky pins that we negotiate on metal days or really windy days. As always, you come away from a broadcast like that realizing that there's a gulf between professional golf and Saturday afternoon choppers. So
yeah. What did Nicholas say about Tiger in 97? He plays a game with which we're not familiar. That's just those guys.
Yeah, even when it's not going well, they still manage to get it around in numbers that are much lower than ours. So
and you know what slays me, Matty, is that with the absolute ultimate respect to all those guys who are professional golfers and are sublime, Scotty Scheffler would probably 10-8 most of them most days. And so you kind of look at, I mentioned Mr. Plus 7, Zach Mullins at New South Wales Golf Club. You know, he is an absolute daddy over, people like me. Then, these guys who are winning Australian Order of Merits and getting DP World Tour cards absolutely would lord it over him. And then they tee it up with Scotty Scheffler and he would absolutely pump.
Yeah.
It's just the levels of golf, it's exponential, when you're getting to that point. And it's that old Tom Coyne line about scratchy shit. It's just wild.
look out rest of the PGA Tour if he manages to continue to putt well with that mallet as well. But yeah, very good. Moving closer to home, just getting back, circling back to the national. It really looked good. Great to see Cameron John take out an event. Really good to see Matt Griffin acquit himself well. Daniel Gale, lots of good stories in that tournament and lots of good play. Aaron Townsend was up there, saw his name on screen a bit during the weekend, and a couple of really, really low rounds on the weekend, which were just amazing to see.
Mm. Across Moona especially, like, it's not like they're playing a short or easy golf course. And watching them play that back nine, you know, people like you and I just dissolve on the way home. It's just wild how good they hit it and how unfazed they are by difficulty. But I think I loved that it just shows off Moona. We'll get to Moona because it's part of our top 20 to chat about tonight. But, you know, I think that's just such a wonderful, very Australian golf course. Doesn't necessarily get the plaudits or the attention that it might if it were in a less jam-packed locale. A lot of good golf around it that people focus on. So, yeah, always lovely to see it get a bit of love. Now,
before we get in, I was just going to do a quick ad read for Burnley Brewing.
Well, I was going to say, you hunted down on the weekend your white whale, which is the pineapple poltergeist.
Yeah, went out for dinner on Friday night and found some of those cans in the fridge at the restaurant that was dinner for a few of us. So very, very happy to have a sip of that. And it was as good as I'd hoped for. It was strong. Wouldn't be drinking too many of them if I was driving home. But it was well worth it, and I'll be seeing if I can go back and grab a tiny bit more before they're out. So that was Moon in Collingwood, just off Smith Street, Stanley Street. Fantastic little eatery, almost a little hole in the wall. You could walk past it and not know it, but fantastic little place there. Burnley Brewing won an award. Their number one wheat beer in Australia at the Untapped Community Awards.
There you go.
In 2023. And I don't think that was the only award that they won that night. They had a Rausch Weizen that was honoured. They won something for their sour, traditional Ghost. And also a brown ale, that coffee brown ale that I think I might have spoken with you about once before. So we've talked about their range before and the diversity and the interesting little runs, the short runs that they do, and how their brewers really have license to experiment and do all sorts of different things. That's probably testament to it. So if the sound of any of those tickles your fancy, Burnley Brewing, 648 Bridge Road, Richmond. Go stick your head in there and grab something to take away, or go and have a meal in there and try some of the beers they've got on tap.
Shout out to Burnley and thank you for the support. Shall we get onto the main course?
Let's go. I'm really looking forward to hearing some of your four-word course reviews. We're basically going to work through the Golf Australia top 20 in their most recent rankings list from 2024.
Correct. Yeah. So Jan 2024 edition of the magazine, the rankings get done every second year. So most recent rankings, you know, and they're a couple of months old. They're pretty hot off the press.
And generally we're biased. We admit that out front. We've been a part of that panel for a long while. But we generally feel that that's probably the most reliable and most representative list. If we were going to give a catalogue to someone else in another part of the world and say this is a pretty good rundown of our top flight golf courses in this nation, that would be the resource we'd send them, I suspect.
Yeah, look, I think it's the list that is concerned with what's between the first tee and the 18th green. You know, no disrespect to Golf Digest Mag, it scratches an itch, I think, for people who are maybe more focused on the overall experience of entering the parking lot to leaving the parking lot. And that's a lot of people, that's what might govern their feelings about the day. You know, our panel looks at golf courses. And I think that's what I'm saying. One list is better than the other necessarily, but that they're different. They focus on different things and then they throw up different orders of courses as a result. But, you know, for us, it's about the golf. So this is the list that I guess it's the panel that we both chose to be on for a reason.
Yeah.
So, yeah, we've got 1 through 20, and maybe we'll start at 20 and work to 1. But there were some things, Matty, that I was quite struck by as I looked through this list initially when I grabbed the magazine in the summer holidays. And then I've gone back and I've just kind of gone through it over the last couple of months and noticed different things each time. The consistency of some of the courses, particularly around, you know, in the teens. So as an example, Kingston Heath was second this time. It's been as low as sixth in the last five editions. It's quite volatile at that top end where, you know, there's probably less to separate courses. But even in the mid-teens, it's uncanny to me that... So St Andrews Beach has basically gone 13, 13, 12, 13, 13, the last five lists. Metro has gone 13, 12, 15, 17, 15, 14, like very, very consistent. And the Lakes, 15, 15, 14, 16, 14, 15. So I think it shows that a lot of these courses, they are what they are. There's a consistency in the way that they're viewed. I think it, at the top end of the rankings, I think can change based on a little tweak here or there on one of those top five courses. But for me, I think it's probably a testament to the panel and the rankings that those courses in that section there, they do run pretty consistently. I know like Barwon Heads, 21, 21, 19, 20, 19, 20. So, you know, all the panelists I talk to say they don't look at their old list when they re-rank. I don't do that. I know, I think you and I have chatted and you don't do that. It's not a case of where did I put them last time and that's my starting point. I'll just sit down every 2 years and, you know, we've talked about the fact that my ranking of Dunes and Lost Farm at Barney will change based on how I'm feeling about, you know, excitement or consistency. So just a little bit there, I think, around the basis of the rankings, I think, is a really strong and consistent approach to that top 20.
Mm, yeah, that's a really good point. I like the way that you refer back to this list as predominantly being based on what's between the first tee and the 18th green as well. That's way more succinct description of it than I could put. So
the other thing that jumped out to me, mate, is that New South Wales, like the state of New South Wales courses, have been absolutely hammered in the last decade. So Newcastle in 2014 was 17th, and in the most recent list, it's 30th. New South was 5th in 2014. It got out as far as 11th, and it's 9th this time around. And Royal Sydney was 21st in 2014, Matt. It was 56th in 2022. And if it hadn't closed for its reno and then been excluded from the 2024 list, I suspect it might have been even further back than that this time around. So some real drops. That's a testament to, A, brand new courses opening. It's a testament to existing courses doing significant renos. It's probably a testament to tastes changing somewhat in that 2014 to 2024 period. Bit of panel overhaul and new members and fresh tastes. It's not a good look for the state of New South Wales, which I'm sure you'll love.
No, not at all. I don't revel in that. I think it's probably a sign that there's just a maximisation of so many other courses in different parts around the country, and the emergence of new courses, as you say. So there's two on King Island, and continued exposure to panelists of other courses around the country. And some that have been reworked, like Yarra Yarra, which has jumped up a few dozen spots, no doubt, as a consequence of Renaissance Golf's work, Renaissance Golf's efforts there on that course. And Commonwealth might make a similar sort of climb as well. So
you've segged perfectly to another thing that I noticed that was on my list, is that Yarra, you know, courses that do work obviously tend to jump. Yarra was the real standout of that. It was between 2014 and 2016 on those three lists, it was 34th, 34th and 32nd. It had no ranking in 2020 while it underwent that work. It was 17th and then 16th in the last two lists since it opened. So a pretty remarkable, you know, it's halved its ranking.
And crept ahead of Ocean Dunes.
It has, which, I mean, Ocean Dunes, you keep tearing me up, mate, to my next point that I've got here on my list. It's great. We haven't even discussed this. What's noticeable too is that these brand new courses, they debut really high, and then after, you know, a list or two, they just fall. So Ocean Dunes, we had that at 8 in 2018, and it's down to 18 last time and 17 this time. We had Wickham
got as low as 2. It's out to 3, which is obviously not a massive drop, but at that end of the list, it's not insignificant. You know, we see those courses quite routinely, brand newies. PK North is kind of an example, I guess. You know, it was 5th in 2020, the first time it got ranked after it reopened. It's out to 8th. So there is certainly a consistent theme of brand new courses wowing people fresh out the box. And then as, you know, it's played for a second, third, fifth, tenth time, they're sort of just slipping back a little bit to where they invariably settle.
There's that tendency when you see something new to be wowed by the positives and maybe not see the negatives or gloss over the negatives a little bit at times. I remember when I went to WA and saw the Cut for the first time, I was blown away by its strengths and sort of didn't really focus much on its weaknesses. And then you go back and play it again and listen to what other people say and read of someone else's experiences and think, oh, okay, I might have had this a bit too high. Yeah, they find their level sometimes after a while.
I was also quite taken by, so Peninsula Kingswood is such a fascinating study because, you know, they had essentially the blank checkbook to redevelop those two courses. When they closed for their reno, the North course was ranked number 20 in the country and the South course was ranked number 25. And South has gone basically from 25 into between 16 and 18 post-reno, and North went from 20th to 5th, 6th, and now 8th. But from 20th to inside, comfortably inside the top 10, that's a remarkable jump. You know, South is up a little bit, but North has just absolutely gone through the moon.
Yeah, it's a big jump at that pointy end. It's interesting when we get to do our reviews of each of those, I'm not 100% sold that the gap between North and South is as big as a lot of rankings would have you believe and as big as some visitors would have you believe. They're slightly different in character, and I know almost everyone prefers the North, but I'm not sure that there's that much of a difference between the two in terms of their quality and where they should sit on rankings lists. Let's get into these four-word course reviews. We're going to start at the bottom and work from number 20 to number 1. And at number 20, we have Barwon Heads Golf Club.
You got one for us?
I have. Classic old world charm.
I have English Golf Down Under, which is basically the same thing.
Essentially what Josh Ralston said when he was visiting last week. So those of you who follow Josh on Instagram, Golfing Scotland, he is a professor at the University of Edinburgh who's been on 3 months sojourn in Melbourne, born and raised in California and then studied at Wake Forest and then went on to do more study in Christian Muslim studies elsewhere and is an expert on all things Saudi Arabia and the Middle East and sports washing and various other things at this time. So he's a man in demand at the moment for his opinion and his voice on the speaking tour. So he's been in Melbourne the last 3 months. We put a picture up on Instagram, which was a collection of his screens from a story that compared Australian golf courses to wines, which was another interesting comparison. And he has an extremely cultured palate and a very, very broad experience of some fine wines throughout the world. There's not a lot of people who are going to be able to talk wine with the depth and understanding that Josh brings to both that and golf courses.
But he made some stories. They were wasted on me.
Well, Chris Kane was in raptures, just thought they were perfect. And the bit that I understood was I was marveling at the accuracy of his comparisons he's got around and seen a lot and I think he heads back within the week. He and his family returned to Scotland and he thought that a little piece of the UK had just been transplanted onto the Bellarine Peninsula when he visited Barwon Heads. So no surprise we describe it the way we did.
Yeah, quite. I mean, I think the course and the club are very English, bit posh, bit understated, and the links is, you know, it's one of the few true links that we have. So, I mean, I feel like it's maybe Rye's cousin, something like that.
Yeah, I could see that. a little further down the road on the Bellarine Peninsula, 19 gets us to Lonsdale Links.
I've got your mate's eccentric brother.
I was going to be, I love that. That's better than mine. I was going to actually be a tiny bit scathing and say, not sure templates work.
Yeah, I think that's 100%. And I think that's the eccentricity for me, is that I think the course is better than its execution of the templates is, which you would have thought a template course was only going to be as good as its execution of the templates. I actually think, despite some of those maybe not hitting the mark, you know, you're inclined to like your mate's brother, and he's a bit of a weirdo, but he's a good bloke, and you have a beer with him, it's never going to be boring.
Yeah, and I really like the course. To qualify my comments, if I get an invitation to go, well, I might not get an invitation to go play now on the back of this, but if I got an invitation to go play there, I would do everything in my power to make sure I could accept it, because it's a fantastic course and great fun, and I was toying with words like imaginative, inventive, because it bears no comparison to its former self, that course. They've been extremely brave in doing what they've done, as we spoke about with Joseph from Sleepy Hollow when we talked about the course with him last year. It's wide, it's fun, it's short, it's playable. Yeah, your mate's eccentric brother. There you go. Nice. All right, the first of the two Peninsula Kingswood courses south is number 18 in these rankings. And as you said, it had been pretty consistent around the, did you say the 30s, mid-30s prior to the Reno work?
Mid-20s into mid to late teens, which, you know, okay, it's a pretty decent little jump. I think there's a level of quality that sits between, you know, 15 to 20 and 21 to 25. You know, I feel like it's kind of incremental a lot through that list, but there seems to be, for me, you go past 20 and you've got Karrinup, Cathedral Lodge, RQ, Woodlands, The Dunes, Cooyonga, National Old, 13th Beach. Like, you do drop a standard, I think. I think the top 20 kind of is the barrier for entry. So, yeah, getting it from mid-20s into the teens, I think that's significant in terms of the uplift.
Yeah, I agree. Part of me pines for a few of those courses that are outside 20, but I think I agree with you. So
what's your four-word course review for PK South?
Better than rankings suggest was one of the four-word reviews that I was thinking of. In its brother's shadow was the other.
Mm-hmm.
Which I was toying which course to actually award that to, because there's a few potential recipients of that four-word course review, but I thought it belonged to Peninsula Kingswood South. It's others will draw a different comparison because it's a bit longer and a bit wider than North, and you feel like you can open your shoulders and really have a lash from the tee on so many more holes on South than you can North, and that'll influence the way that people interact with the course and enjoy it and rate it. Yeah, in its brother's shadow.
Okay. I mean, I am at the disadvantage of having not played South even pre-Reno. So I'm limited by what I've seen on Instagram and elsewhere. So the four-word course review I came up with, just from the visuals I've seen, was Sandstone Wholesaler's Wet Dream. Because, golly, there's some sandstone out there on those creeks.
There's sand as well. So
yeah.
I'm really looking forward to you seeing it and playing it. And it doesn't matter to me if it's going to be in great condition. I can guarantee that. But if it's easy pins, hard pins, windy, still, I'm just interested to see what you do in those conditions on that course on that day. It really is. We'll no doubt come back to this when we've got an episode dedicated to PK exclusively down the road. But it really seems to be the product of someone who's been given a great site and a lot of cash and significant creative license.
Yeah. Which is a rare combination that those three things come together.
And also a degree of sensibility with design that extends to those little things like coarse furniture and fixtures and the one percenters and the tiny little things around a meandering creek that provide an aesthetic element to a course that lasts in your mind long after your score is remembered. So, yeah, I'm so looking forward to you seeing that. And we've got a couple of different potential guests who can discuss PK with us when that podcast hits the airwaves. I'm busting for that.
Now, on to another course I haven't played, and I think you've only played part of because it may not have been fully open when you played it. Now, my only experience of Ocean Dunes, obviously, then is Instagram and some YouTube and looking at the aerials of the routing. And looking at the routing on aerials makes me think of places that might compare to it, say, like Hamilton Island or Bonneville. And my forward course review for Ocean Dunes was very scenic cart ride.
Could see that.
Might be unfair because, as I say, I've not even been on the landmass that it is built on, but that was my attempt at summarising what I've seen of Ocean Dunes.
Mine was high highs, low lows.
Yeah, okay.
It's really, really good in parts. That string of 2, 3, 4 I absolutely love. But there's some parts of the walk on the back nine that are a bit pedestrian, and there's some parts of the course that are inland and away from that really dramatic shoreline that you feel like you could just be playing any sort of course on the Mornington Peninsula. Like, it doesn't really have a great sense of place and that great quality that's apparent on the course's best holes really feels like it falls away on some others, doesn't extend all the way through the layout. And some other courses meander away from that dramatic land onto more flat stuff and different terrain and different topography throughout their 18-hole journey. And yet they manage to carry themselves with distinction for the whole 4 hours. And yeah. I don't feel like Ocean Dunes quite does that.
And I think exactly what you articulate there, that's what 7 Mile Beach is going to do. And that's why I think 7 Mile Beach, just based on seeing, you know, walking / four-wheel driving the routing when it was half built, I don't want to say the number, but I've got a very high number in mind of where I think that's going to debut and stick, because those inland holes are sublime golf holes that don't, you know, that place isn't going to rely on views or interaction with the beach to wow people. I think some of the holes that people are going to sit with a beer post round and talk about and really enthuse about are the ones where you can't see the water. And I think that's what differentiates. Did you have a great site or did you build a great course?
And they've seeded more areas since we spoke with Mike DeVries. They've had more grass grow. I think they might even have had a tiny bit of rain, which is an answer to his prayers. So David Jones, UK golf guy, is out in Melbourne this week and was here last week with a group of 18, I think, all up from Canada, UK, Europe and the US traveling around, and they had a site inspection with Mike and Anthony. They were gushing at what they saw. So just echoing your positive thoughts from when you saw it last year and just licking their chops. So we'll probably have David on actually
I'm definitely keen for that. He's spending a lot of time down here, so
his perspective will be really interesting to listen to, because he's seen an awful lot around the world. As you said, number 16, Yarra Yarra. My forward course review for them was got its mojo back.
Yeah, which tallies with the jump from 34 to 16.
And they've just really, I've probably said it a couple of times on previous episodes, that they've just repolished a gem and made really sensible changes, some fantastic green work, some overdue and very appropriate vegetation management, tiny little tweak to the sequence of holes in the first half dozen that you play. So you're away on a shortish par four and not facing that long par three for your further away from the clubhouse for your first tee shot of the day. Just a joy to see that the property's really been maximized and the course is playing about as well as it could. So,
I mean, for me, it's too easy now, which is the quote that I keep hearing from people who don't like it that makes me really enthused about seeing it post-reno.
It's too easy now. That's great. Yeah. The cry for National Gunnamatta What else? Yarra, a couple of others. Yeah, probably a badge of honour.
Yeah. Honest. Yeah.
So a course that you are far more familiar with at number 15 is the Lakes, where you've played lots.
Yeah, so I went with, for the Lakes, B-sides trump the singles. It's one of those ones for me that, you know, if the Lakes is an album, it's not the bangers on the radio that I most enjoy. It's the songs around those that I think give it the bulk and the character and the enjoyment for me. It's holes like, you know, 1, 2, 3 to kick off, the short par 4, 6, the 8th, the par 5 down the road, like it's down one of the busiest roads in Sydney and under a flight path. And to me, that's a highlight of playing that golf course. It's the long par 4 up the hill at 12. It's, you know, it's 16 with kind of that blind drive where you need to be mindful of where the water is. Those are the holes for me that justify a 15 in the country ranking for the Lakes, you know. A lot more photos taken of 1, 11, 14, 17. But, you know, and an absolute banger of a par 3 for it to finish on. You know, like for me, I'm with music, I love like the final song on the album. What is it? How does it kind of summarize the album and send you out? And for me, that whole ensuring that you have to hit a long club, often into a southerly, for your last hole of the day, I think that's sublime. I know there are people who just write off a par 3 18th as silly or not serious, but what a good hole.
Yeah, agreed.
I'm still not sure it's 15 in the country. It feels like that's the highest it could be, but I'm glad that it's there.
Yeah, I think that's probably its ceiling. I think even for the most ardent fan of the course, if you said, oh, you've gone up 3 spots to 12 in the next lot of rankings, they'd probably be thinking, oh, I don't know if we necessarily belong there. But, 15 feels like it might be a bit of a ceiling. My review for them, for what it's worth, is makes a lot of little. So yeah. I'd really thought if I was a designer and someone gave me that parcel of land and said, here you go, build a course, I would not be licking my chops. I wouldn't want to be wedged up against an ultra-busy freeway. I wouldn't want to be under a flight path. I wouldn't know what to do with all the water meandering in different parts of the course, and I wouldn't want it covered in kikuyu. But here we are talking about it in the upper echelons of the courses in this country, and it boasts a great tournament history. It really benefited from that rework that it had with Clates and Co. years ago. Mm.
And a great set of greens. You know, if greens are to a golf course what a face is to a portrait, you know, that's where, with all anything else going against you, if you build a great set of greens, you're a long way along to building a great golf course. And the Lakes has one of the best sets of greens, I think, in the country. Now, Matt, in a lot of different directions, I could have gone with number 14. I considered for my forward course reviews Elsa Pataky's husband's brother. I considered Miley Cyrus's ex-husband. I considered India Hemsworth's youngest uncle. But I settled with good actor, not Thor. Of course, it's Metropolitan Golf Club in Melbourne.
Oh, I love them all. That's fantastic. Home of Mike Clayton.
That's a good one.
Home of Lucas Michel.
Home of Suo.
Late night cricket match. Lots of flat lies.
Yeah. Michelle, LBW, Big Randy. Mate, you know what struck me about Metro, and it's consistent with all of these things that we've fixated on, probably at, you know, to a fault in some people's eyes since we started with this whole Liam Hemsworth bit. But Metro, I mentioned it earlier, in terms of consistent ranking, 13, 12, 15, 17, 15, 14. This is a mid-teens golf course in Australia. It's a mid-teens golf course because it's on probably a 35-level piece of property with an incredible piece of design on it. But you know, the canvas is basically a huge part of determining how good a golf course can be. Doesn't battle Kingston Heath at number two, West Course Royal Melbourne number one, you know, RM East, Victoria, PK North. It doesn't battle them in the rankings because it doesn't have a piece of land as good as theirs. Even Kingston Heath, which people say it's good despite its property, property at Kingston Heath is significantly better than Metro. And so I think to me, this is what really locks in that Metro is an incredible piece of golf design, maintained magic maintenance, like as good as there is in Australia, but it is simply on not a good enough site to be higher than probably 13 or 14, which is where it sits.
Yeah.
Like it's maximized its potential by being there, and that's no diss.
Yeah. And its design character that most people recognize it for was the center of my serious forward course review, bunkers eating into greens,
mm-hmm.
which everyone always comments about when they go there, and that's what they relish when they think of returning, and they tend to see that at Metro more than they see it at other places, and certainly comment on it about a visit to Metro more than they would at most other courses. So St Andrews Beach is number 13.
Mm-hmm. What do you got?
I was a bit stuck because I've got a whole range of friends that some really love St Andrews Beach. Some don't care for it particularly much. I was going to say great course divides opinion, but I'm not sure if that really does it enough justice.
Interesting. Mine was proof publics get negged. Because answer me this. If St Andrews Beach had stuck at that equity buy-in private club, you know, 50 grand 15 years ago price point, tell me it wouldn't be ranked top 10.
Yeah, you do wonder if it had a palatial clubhouse and a big front gate and it was exclusive and they didn't have much member play and their membership roster was full of blokes that paid $50,000 20 years ago, I think you're right. I think it would be in the top 10 in the country and people would be crawling over broken glass to play it and talking about it the same way that they talk about Elliston when it's infinitely superior to Elliston.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's 100% right. And golf does this right because all these courses in the northeast of the US that aren't as good as accessible courses in Britain or in Australia get oohed and aahed and enthused about. And the reality is the golf's not better. It's just that if you can play there, it says something in your mind about who you are versus the people who can't play there. And I think the great thing about St Andrews Beach is if you've got $103, you can play there on a Saturday.
Well, I was going to read you one little paragraph on that front. Tom Doak says St Andrews Beach is the course he built that he would most want in his own backyard. Sorry, Bunboogle. Sorry, Ballyneal. Sorry, Bandon. And Aussies can roll up and play it any day for $100. Many probably don't realise how fortunate they are.
Smart bloke must have written that, Matty.
That's what I was thinking too. Yeah. So, public courses get nicked.
Mm.
Yeah.
And there you go. I'd forgotten I wrote that in the rankings edition when I came up with this forward course review. So, it's good to sometimes be reminded that you have some consistency in your head.
Yeah. Number 12 is its Mornington Peninsula neighbour, the National Golf Club's Moona course. So, that's almost celebrating its 25th birthday. Time marches on.
Yeah. What do you got?
Definitely Norman's best layout, which is probably recognising the role of Bob Harrison without mentioning him. But yeah, I don't think there's a better golf course in the Norman portfolio. We were talking about it at the top of the show in terms of the course's role hosting the BMW Invitational last weekend. And I just struggle to think that there's a better course in their body of work. One of those courses that everyone always loves playing, great site, expansive site, stacks of time on site from Bob Harrison, and a real whittling down of a routing to make sure that you had as many good holes and a great sequence of holes, and tried to get to interesting and important parts of that property throughout the 4-hour journey as well.
And a shout out to people who haven't listened to Bob's chat with us on this podcast. You know, he talked about the whole wrestle he had mentally around getting out to where 11 is, and that essentially dictated the, I want to say death march, but that sounds like a criticism. But, you know, it's a long golf course back in from 12 tee to 18 green. But he basically decided, look, it's worth it to get these holes that get me out to where the 11th is. So, yeah, that embarrassment of all those rolling Cups Country acres probably made that a much more difficult exercise than if you only had enough good land that there were 18 places to put holes.
Yeah, even very early on in the design process, I remember him mentioning in communication to members that there you could put 100 holes out there and you had to just find not necessarily the 18 best, but the sequence of 18 that worked the best. And you might get wedded to a particular green site or a particular hole at some stage during the design process, but you might have to divorce yourself of that to ensure that you ended up with a course of greater quality at the end of the day. So Bob was episode 22 of ours. We spoke with him in the middle of May last year. And yeah, he was unsurprisingly a fantastic chat. And
he was great.
Yeah.
Really not just about golf either. There was just some really good stuff about his life and his kind of perspective, which was great. Mine, for the record, for Nash Mooner was the most Australian course.
Yeah, and I've heard you use that a descriptor like that a couple of times for it, and I really like that. It's of its place, and it's brawny and big and unapologetic. And we talked about Elliston having a character similar to its owner, and I think the Mooner course has a character that's reminiscent of its country as well. Yeah.
RA is next, Royal Adelaide. It's number 11. I wanted to use my four words on that: architectural and cultural chameleon. We talked in the RA episode that I feel like that could be in the London Heathlands, that could be in North Carolina, that could be on the lower parts of Long Island. It has a bit of a feel unlike anything else. Certainly unlike anything else in Australian golf, unlike anything else, but a bit like everything else in the great cities that golf's played around the world. So, yeah, bit of a chameleon for me.
Yeah, that's a good descriptor. Worth the interstate flight.
Yeah.
So many people come to Melbourne and they'll spend a tiny bit of time in Sydney and Tasmania, and that's pretty much it for their trip, but everyone that you speak with that goes the extra mile and says, well, I'm going to put in a bit of extra effort and allow 2 days to go to Adelaide, do one or two other little things apart from play Royal Adelaide, they all talk about that trip being worth it.
Mm. And by going to Adelaide too, like, yeah, Melbourne and Sydney, global cities, big cities, you go to Barney or King Island, absolute remote regional Australia. Adelaide as a small city, very remote geographically, it's got its own thing going on. So it's actually, like, in terms of a visit to Australia, it is its own experience as well compared to the stuff that golfers might otherwise be doing.
Yeah.
Definitely worth the interstate flight. That's a good one.
Number 10 is New South Wales.
You first.
Oh, no, I can't. I was just gonna surf your wave and just listen to what you said for this and just tack one on at the very end. Go for it.
Look, I've had a couple of margs in half a Burnley pail, so this might be headstrong. My forward course review as of right now, with a few initial changes underway and the taste in my mouth for this redesign, my forward course review was top four, we coming.
Ooh, okay.
I'm really excited. One is a completely different golf hole with just some width and less severe elevation. 14 is going to be greatly improved by the reshaping short of the main ridge. It gives that hole a completely new facet. playing it in champs qualifying on Saturday with a group of good players, we all agree there's days where you've got to hit the 160 metre shot short of the ridge to the new fairway and take the angle and the longer approach in. You know, that hole is already one of the best short fours in the world, and it's going to be even better now. I've got a bit excited, Matty, and I've said top four we coming. That's, you know, when Lost Farm and RM East are 5 and 6, that's lofty. But I think if...
Well, 7 Mile Beach is on the way too.
7 Mile Beach as well. Anyway, I've said it now, so...
So mine was Australia's most dramatic sight.
Yeah.
So I don't think there's a golf course, I don't think there's a parcel of land with a golf course on it in Australia that is more dramatic than that. That sense of exhilaration that you get when you crest the rise on 5 and you tee off from Cape Banks on the 6th and you come back and revisit the course, the coastline rather later on in your second 9. We know some of our Victorian mates are a bit critical of the course because of its strategic purity or lack thereof, but it leaves an indelible mark in your mind, and people have this sense of exhilaration that they hold on to after having played New South Wales.
Mm.
That's worth a lot. So
doesn't matter. The National is number 9.
I was toying with a couple of ideas regarding its former life as Ocean, but I decided against that.
I had the pleasure of never having played it in its previous form. So my forward course review for Gunnamatta at the National was Doakes Chess, not Checkers. I feel like playing that golf course is playing chess based on wind and pin positions. It's not a simple moves type thing. It's, okay, am I aiming at the right edge or the left edge of the fairway based on this wind and this pin? You know, it really does change that severely on a few holes day to day. And I think it's a great golf example of playing chess, not checkers.
Yeah, it is. And I think the third hole probably encapsulates that for most
people.
The
hole I was thinking about when I said that, yeah.
Most vividly, yeah. You've just got to look at where that pin's cut. You've got to be, and you probably get it on your second play of the course because you know how that green is contoured and what happens to an approach from the left or right, depending on where the pin is. But yeah, there's just such profound difference in your start line on your drive, depending on where that hole is cut on that green. And that's repeated throughout the round a few times. So you get a glimpse of the 7th green as you walk up 4, and you're definitely driving it to different spots depending on where that hole is cut, 8 as well. Yeah. Well, and it continues on the back. Yeah.
Yeah. Agreed. 15. I've told the story. I think it might have been on our National episode, might have been like our third episode we did, about playing the first time on Gunnamatta with Brian Walsh, and the pin was left on 15, and he pointed at some trees that were like 45 degrees to the right. And he said, I want you to hit driver over those. And I was like, okay, man, like, I'll do as I'm told, but I can't see that shot. And walked up to my ball, and all of a sudden there's this perfect approach angle with a backstop to that left pin. To a right pin, you'd be dead there. But, yeah, Doak really, well, Schneider and Clyde Johnston as well, really built something so multidimensional on that golf course. And quite a few people I know who've gone to play it have come back and said to me, and obviously we were fortunate, Matty, the time that we played it, well, you probably played it before that, but Renaissance Cup, you know, played it 4 times in 3 days, and you get the chance to see it in different moods and different pins and learn how genius it is. I've had mates go down and play it, and they play it once on a trip, and they come back, and they're like, I don't really see what you're talking about there. And then the next trip and the next trip, because we've got recips with National, so a lot of my mates get down there a bit, they're like, that's a really good golf course, isn't it? Like, it's growing on me every time, and I'm seeing it. So that's one of the great things I think about that for a members club, is it does reveal itself over multiple plays.
And I remember that one of the criticisms of Ocean in its first few years was that the club would ultimately have been best served by having 3 different courses of distinctly different character. And there was this feel that Moona, particularly with equipment of the early 2000s, not so much today, but that Moona was the designated players course, and it was the tough course. And oh, you've got this second course just below it, and it's similarly tough. Why didn't you design something shorter that was more manageable, that was wider mm-hmm. and had more ground game elements to it and was much more fun? And they have that now. And that really led me back, without trying to be an overt detractor of the Thompson Wolveridge Perrott course or the effort with Ocean, but mine was infinitely better than before. still scarred by a few Ocean memories. So I tried to think about giving Gunnar Matter a forward course review that delineated it as the one to play. If someone said, oh, you can come down the Nash, which course do you want to play? Would it be Gunnar Matter? And I thought, oh, I don't know, because there's some Bluebird days where you go around old and it's magical, and it's maybe not as good a course as the other two, but it's just something special. So
I don't say this as a shot at the other panel, but to articulate what we're talking about at the top of the episode, Nash Old is the, I think, Golf Digest magazine archetype of that's going to rank highly, because that whole experience of a day playing old on a beautiful day is pretty difficult to match, even if the golf isn't maybe as good as certainly going to matter, but Moona. But I think when you're focused on just playing golf, it's the other two courses that separate themselves from old. And as an example, our list has Old at 27, Moona at 12, Nash Gunnar Matter at 9. So 9, 12, 27. And that's probably pretty consistent with how I view them, to be honest. Like, top of my head, my 10-round split would probably be 5, 3, 1. No, hang on, that's only 9. 5, 4, 1. 5, 4, 1.
Okay. Yeah. I reckon the Golf Digest panel is wedded to this shot values. I know it's changed a little bit in recent years, but that seems to have been something at the core of what they've done with their rankings for so long. And I still wrestle with the definition of it. And I think someone who's wedded to assessing courses with that philosophy can go to Gunnar Matter and not necessarily see, like, they might play the third and think, oh, well, I drove it into the middle of the fairway and I couldn't quite get the pin, couldn't get an approach as tight as I wanted, but lagged my first putt up there and tapped in for par. What's the big deal about the third hole on the Gunnar Matter? And they see someone like you or Brian play it, and, oh, okay, that pin's right side, so I need to drive it as far left as I possibly can. And now I'm up the length of this green, hitting into an upslope, and I trickle it to that back tier. And, well, hang on, there's your shot value. You guys, you just missed it. It slaps you in the face when you play old. And I think it can elude you at times when you're playing a dope course that's sophisticated and a bit subtle, or it doesn't slap you in the face with its visuals. So that's... Yeah, not to labour the point, but I think you're right in that is a significant difference between the approach of the two different panels, Golf Australia Magazine and Australian Golf Digest. So
that's a good effort trying to dodge the question, but 10 rounds at Nash.
Oh, 10. I'm going to go 4-3-3, Gunnar Matter, and then 3 on old, 3 on Moona. I just love old for some reason.
Yeah, I know. Look, maybe your heart's involved here. My heart's not involved. Yeah, which is not to say that you're wrong. It's just to say that we've got different ways of evaluating.
That McKenzie quote about the affinity for a particular mud heap does come to the forefront of my mind whenever I talk positively about old, because it has some shortcomings. But I played it, when was it? Between Christmas and New Year. Warm day, sun shining, no clouds, less than a 1 club wind, some interesting pins, greens were rolling pure, and it just... to think, man, this is so much fun.
Yep, I can see it. Number 8, PK North. Choppers need not apply.
I'd at the risk, again, at the risk of selling it short, yeah, bring your bunker game.
Yep.
Which does it a disservice, because we spoke glowingly not 20 minutes ago about how it was a collision of great design and great soil and great topography, and the agronomy is always first rate I'd spoken with a couple of people over that Christmas New Year holiday and the first month of the year, and we'd had half a foot of rain in Melbourne and the Sandbelt in January. So not an ideal warm summer for presentation of great playing surfaces on Sandbelt courses. But it looked like it was the best prepared golf course on mainland Australia, Peninsula North. It just looked amazing. Everyone who was going there was raving. And it does have hole after hole of great design. And like you alluded to before with the lakes, superb set of greens. Not to be missed. Try to get on. You could use either of those two as well. Cause I think it's not quite as apparent as it would have been 2 years ago. But when people came to the Sandbelt, they probably had their dance card marked with the regular courses, the big names and the established clubs. And maybe not Peninsula Kingswood, but that word got out pretty quickly that no, you need to see this and you need to add this onto your roster when you're down here. So
even so, pre-reno when I played it, and it was one of those things where you were like, that piece of land has a better golf course in it, and it's really, really, really good. Like I probably ranked it top 20 in the country then, and I was like, that there's something you polish away and you rub at the surface. There's a golf course there. And so absolutely no surprise that people play it and say it's better than RM West. Some people, you know, better than Kingston Heath, whatever. It's in that conversation, whether it's actually better than them or not. I think it was there. You could see that it was there. And as we talked about before, it was OCM, maybe it was still OCCM just, but being given a great piece of land, creative freedom, and do what you need to do financially. Like that's a rare combination of factors. So
all right. Number seven is Vic, getting to the pointy end now.
Yep. Lead us off.
Greater than its parts.
No way.
No, don't tell me you said the same four words.
Greater than the parts.
Oh wow. Mate. Wow. Okay.
It honestly 101. There aren't that many holes that are in my go-to standout holes on the Sandbelt, but the course as a whole is one of the absolute hitters, and it's greater than its parts.
Yeah, it's another one that's benefited from some recent work. So they redid irrigation lines. They redo every green in 2019.
Yep.
They changed over to Pure Distinction during that as well, and then changed one or two greens, particularly 12.
Yeah, 5, 12, 17 got significant changes. And the others, they said they were just rebuilding exactly to plan. But, you know, in that great video that we looked at and talked about with Cocking and Jeff Ogilvie talking about the 7th, you know, they mentioned that, oh, we recaptured a front pin in that Bishop's Gate when we did the work. So although they said in their sales pitch to members, we're just rebuilding everything as is, you know, they went and actually improved some stuff even further.
Number six is just across the road from Victoria on the other side of Reserve Road, the East Course at Royal Melbourne. It's another Alec Russell course in the top 20 for Australia. This was another candidate for In Its Brother's Shadow. Ignore the road crossings.
Yeah, that's good.
You hit the button and cross Reserve Road after the 4th. You then play two holes on that paddock and cross another little quiet suburban road out on that outermost paddock and play 7 through 14, cross the road for 15, final road crossing to come back and play the last three. And there's definitely a sense that, oh, this continual walking across streets is detracting from my experience, but it's I wouldn't let that be a factor that detracted from your view of the course quality, because it's a fantastic course.
Mm. Do you reckon the road crossings would be less noticeable if the paddocks each had 6 holes instead of, what is it, 7, 3, 8?
That's a good question.
That three-hole paddock in the middle, like you, as you just, like detailed, you cross the road, then you play golf for 20 minutes, and then you cross the road again. But on the way back, it's like maybe 15 minutes between the two road crossings.
I think it does make it. Play 15 cross.
Yeah.
Yeah, it probably would. It probably would. Yeah.
This is the one I struggled with the most. And I was saying to you before we hit record, like I got into a bit of a flow state and a lot of these just came to me pretty quickly. I really ummed and ahed on RM East. And I'm not particularly happy with the one I ended up with, which was Enigmatic Journey Ends Well. And I think it probably speaks to what you're talking about with the road crossings of the journey's a little bit, it's not always certain that this is going to be the journey that you hope to be embarking on, particularly when you're playing, you know, maybe 6, 7, 8, 9. But you start on four holes that are the equal of anything on West. You finish on three holes that are maybe the best par three and the best par five and the best long par four that isn't 17 West on the whole property. That's some pretty good golf holes, even if the stuff that you play in the middle is you know, now and then a little bit iffy. There's also holes like 10, 11 and 13 that are sublime.
Yeah. It's hard. There are some courses that are it's easy to do this. The reviews sort of write themselves, and East is not one of those.
Yeah, I mean the reality is East, like its sister course, is one of the 5 to 7 best golf courses in the world. The composite that it's part of may be the best golf course in the world, and so then number 6 in Australia and number whatever it is 80 something or 90 something in the world feels like a letdown. But in any other situation, if you turned up sight unseen to a golf club and someone told you you were playing a World Top 100, you'd be stoked. It absolutely is that comparison that humbles it, because as a golf course, it's got more great holes than probably, like how many courses in the world might have more great holes than East? 25? Its least good holes drag it down into the bottom end of the World Top 100. But if you look at its best handful of holes,
yeah, it's best
there's not many golf courses.
Yeah, true. Got our final five.
Yes. My forward course review for Lost Farm sort of speaks to the course across the river at the same time. Mine for Lost Farm is The One You Marry.
That's great. Big dunes, you know, and small.
Mm-hmm.
I much prefer The One You Marry.
You had a lot of fun in your 20s with Bunbugle Dunes, but Lost Farm's The One You Marry.
I always remember the discussion about it being impossible to put a course out there because the dunes were so big and it was such a heaving, dramatic property. Like, where's it all going to sit? And the poster child for that is probably the big dune on the inside of 8 and the big dune that you negotiate with your tee shot on 5. That huge dune on the left of 10 as well. There's some big stuff in 14, 15 as well that sort of sits off to the side of play. But the course negotiates all of that so inordinately well. I don't know how Bill Cork manages just to route courses so well. He was actually going to be the topic of my forward course review. Like, please come back, Bill. How this continent has one core Crenshaw course on it only is beyond me. Like, I know that Crenshaw doesn't want to travel and that Bill's a man in demand and they don't build lots of courses and they only respond to offers from great clients with spectacular sites. But I think as a continent, we probably would be better if we had more than one core Crenshaw layout.
Well, I guess if you loop New Zealand in, there's what? TRI South, North.
South, yep.
Yeah. So there's two. We've got two. But yeah, I think Australia could. I think there's some. Doak's got some really cool stuff on some really cool land around the Mornington Peninsula and obviously in Tasmania. I think if you had like a farmland kind of site, like, you know, maybe 90 minutes out of Melbourne in the wrong direction, and you wanted someone to build the best possible golf course on that type of farmy land, I reckon Core could be the guy that did that best.
Yeah, concur with you there, definitely. The older sibling across the cut there, number 4, Bunbugle Dunes by Tom Doak, opened again 2004, so that's 20 years old now.
Yeah.
Drop everything to play.
Yeah, I think that's like your review for Royal Adelaide. I think it's very directive. There's a call to action. And I agree with it 100%.
It harks back to a time when I was much younger and
20 years younger,
single, and would literally fly down to Tassie down back in the day to go play it if conditions looked good or you had a day on a weekend that was free. Or one time I did it just because there was that rare easterly wind and I really wanted to see what it looked like. Becoming harder to do as an old man with kids, but
yeah,
you just, it's one of those courses where you think I've just got to go.
Yeah, I agree. And the reason you just got to go, I think maybe my forward course review describes the reason why it's drop everything and go. So my forward course review was 80 with 6 birdies, which I think is probably not a score card that people are unfamiliar with when they play down there, because there's going to be some carnage, but, you know, you're also going to have some thrills.
Yeah. David Jones' crew really loved their time down there. They were all raving, posted stacks of photos on their respective socials. That might be the carrot that drags a lot of people back, which is an interesting observation in that some of them were from the UK and they've cut their teeth on links courses and they've spent their adult lives playing by the beach and they were enamoured with Barnboogle Dunes. So,
well, respectfully to the British people, you might have played by the beach your whole life. You haven't played by the beach like that. We were playing with an Englishman on Saturday and one of the guys in the group pointed out to the colours, you know, of the waves crashing onto the rocks at La Perouse. And he said, so the ocean looks like where you're from? Yeah, didn't think so. And it's true.
No. Didn't say anything about Captain Cook.
Nothing. Nothing about Captain Cook.
Moving on. Cape Wickham.
Wickham. So I've been doing a bit of research on Wickham, been doing a bit of homework, because there seems to be this, you know, we live in the age of alternate truths and alternate facts, and it is really freaking windy at Cape Wickham beyond what it is at other locations in Australia where we play golf. And there seems to be this counter viewpoint that's coming out now. People going, oh, it's not, you know, it's overplayed and it's blah, 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 blah. The reality is we have this beautiful thing called data that the Bureau of Meteorology has furnished us with, and we have wind roses for all the locations where golf's played in Australia. And you look at, I'll pop these up because it's going to be very hard to describe these in words, but I'll pop these up on Instagram. I have a wind rose, which is basically, if you picture like a radar screen, 360 degrees, and a wind rose will show you from which direction the winds blow in a location, and it also color codes it to show you with what strength they blow. You look at Hobart Airport, which is next door to Seven Mile Beach. You look at Bridport in northern Tasmania, which is where Barnboogle is located. And you look at Currie Airport, which is the nearest location to Cape Wickham. Cape Wickham, by all metrics that, you know, weather is affected by, is more exposed. You know, it's exposed on three sides versus one. It's on a headland in the Southern Ocean, which, you know, tend to be windier than mid-coast locations. It's so, like, it's over 30 kilometres an hour at 3 p.m. about a third of the time there. And by comparison, at Barnboogle and at Hobart, it's like 5% to 10% of the time. So incredible golf course, eye-catching. The 18th maybe falling into the ocean is going to probably be a problem. But like when people talk about Cape Wickham being really, really, really windy, and that's probably going to be part of the problem commercially for that place long term, that's not a narrative that's been invented. It's not exaggeration. Like the data that exists from decades of monitoring backs up the fact that 30% of the time, unless you like playing in 30 plus kilometres an hour of wind, it's going to be challenging to play golf there. That's end of rant.
It'll feel like a segue, but it's not. You've seen Kevin McLeod on Grand Designs?
Yeah.
So there's a Grand Designs Australia, and there were a series of episodes recorded many years ago. And on one particular episode, a couple was building a house not far from Currie. And they wanted to build it higher up on the dunes so that they could maximise their views, not down below in the hollows and the valleys and swales. And they also wanted this textured or architectural exterior or surface. And the local builder, who was commissioned to do some of the job, was on camera saying, well, they've chosen the wrong spot. I understand why they want to be there to see what they want to see, but that exterior will just be gone in a couple of years. And I can't help but think that he wouldn't be saying that in very many other locations in Australia. So it sort of just speaks to your point that, yeah, you're gonna battle the elements if you go down to Cape Wickham, you go down to King Island, full stop. And I know there's days down there where there's a zephyr and you think, man, you guys are lucky. You get to see it in a really, really delightful state and a very manageable condition. But I couldn't escape a forward course review that said hunker down if windy. Has some amazing holes. And that's in the filing cabinet right alongside PK for us to devote a full episode to down the track. And again, a plethora of potential guests to come and share their experiences and views on the course with it for that episode. I'm sure they'll talk about the first being one of the best starters on a golf course that they've ever seen. They'll keep talking about a range of holes, 6, 9, which Bill Schultz talked about as one of the best par fives on the planet. Beautifully picturesque little approach to 10, which Clayton saw last week and put a picture up of. And as Mike DeVries said in the episode that we recorded most recently, that little short par 3-11 that's down on the water, it literally feels like it's in the water. And part of me, for all of the discussion regarding the erosion and the 18th green, I don't know how that 11th hole has still managed to stay where it is, because it feels like it should be 3 feet below sea level some days, but it's not.
We're into the home stretch. We've got two courses left.
All right. Kingston Heath at number 2. Another course to have benefited from some work by Clayton and colleagues. OCM now is the architect firm in residence, but Clayton was doing work there ages ago before they were OCCM.
Yeah. I think it goes back to the Michael Clayton golf design days, doesn't it?
I think it might. I'm not sure that it would have postdated his work at Victoria with Bruce Grant and John Sloan very much at all.
Yeah. So I stole mine. I stole my forward course review. If you are listening to this and you haven't listened to our episode with Tron Carter from No Laying Up, you need to go and do that as a matter of urgency. My forward course review for the Heath was world's best home-cooked meal.
That's a great description. I've gone for a similar sort of philosophy, could play every day.
Yeah. His analogy about RM West being, this incredible piece of steak that you couldn't eat 7 nights a week, but when you do eat it, it's incredible. But the Heath just being the best home-cooked meal you ever had really has hung with me. So, yeah, it really is that thing that there's nothing overwhelming or too rich or whatever about it. It's just a beautiful staple diet that you could follow day in, day out.
I've been talking to Tron a tiny little bit in preparation for my trip to the US next month, and he's spoken with me about some of the courses that I've got on the itinerary. And in typical TC fashion, he has not pulled any punches, and his view might not be the widely held view with a couple of those. So I am very eagerly anticipating seeing some of these places. And I suspect he's probably right in how he assesses and evaluates some of these courses that I'm going to see. So one or two of them are reasonably highly rated and he has been a bit nonplussed. And one or two of them might have a tendency to fly under the radar and he's been in raptures about them. So I'll report back in due course as to the accuracy of his views, but I've got a hunch that he's going to be spot on, just as he was with the home cooked meal comment regarding the Heath. So
yeah, look, Kingston Heath is just, people say despite the property, I increasingly think because of the restraint of that property and the two ridges at either end of the site that get used so smartly, it's not a Mackenzie routing, but people want to listen to our Mike DeVries episode most recently. He talked about the way Mackenzie routed golf courses, you know, to maximize the best landforms and to make sure the most holes played onto, off, or over those landforms. That's what happened at Kingston Heath. Now, obviously, Mackenzie had a role there that didn't involve routing the course, but the amount of holes that they're able to get that interact with a couple of pretty small ridges is quite genius. And for me, it probably lends itself to why it's that home-cooked meal, that course you could play 365 days a year, because it doesn't overwhelm you with scale or landform. It doesn't overwhelm you with features that are built, but it's just relentlessly good to play, interesting to play, challenging, and it's beautiful. Like, the internal views there are as good as there probably is.
Yeah. They've got as much juice out of the lemon as they possibly can. I keep coming back to that phrase in relation to the course, but vegetation management and agronomy and tiny little tweaks that they've done to lengthen the course and allow it to keep pace with professional play. I mean, whether it's the World Cup, whether it's an Australian Open, whether it's the impending arrival of the President's Cup in 2028, yeah, they've just done everything smartly.
There's only one left, Matty.
Number one, Royal Melbourne West, best in Southern Hemisphere for me.
Yeah. Mine, I tried really hard with this one because it is the best course in the Southern Hemisphere. I want to try and do it justice, and it's hard to do justice to a course that good in four words. So I arrived at the Artist's Ultimate Canvas. Now, that refers to Mackenzie designing it. It refers to Richard Forsyth and his team maintaining and improving it. And then for us as golfers, I think it refers to, it's the ultimate canvas. If you treat golf and playing golf as an art versus a science, it's the ultimate place for the artist to really shine. Go to YouTube and look at the 2019 President's Cup to see some of that at a high level. But even at our level, Matty, I feel like it's the course where you can imagine shots and try to create. You can use bounce and run to try and be inventive. It really is just the ultimate canvas for artistic golf.
Yeah. I had a range of, well, the audience will decide if they're more humorous.
go on.
But pitch repair tool, what did I say? Oh, God, I can't believe I've forgotten it. Basically not required.
No.
No pitch, no, yeah, no. Oh, damn it. I've forgotten what I had, and I've added in one more word. I've got a five-word course review. Adam Mezick.
No pitch repair. Yeah, no, that's, yeah, tool required.
No pitch repair
yeah.
tool. Okay, I'll just say no pitch repair tool.
I think that's one of the things that, you know, you remember from your times playing there, and that will immediately, it's one of those like visceral things people will remember hearing their six iron land 160 metres away. There's not many courses where you hear that hollow like knock, like a timber table. It's cool. Yeah.
Andy Johnson talked about the sound of professional golf a couple of years ago, or the sound of major golf, how it differs from week to week PGA Tour. And it was that hollow thud, like you had a ball land on floorboards when you got to a major and the green firmness was there. And I remember messaging him saying, you've just got to come to RM and see that for yourself. Adam Messick's the pro at Headwaters. Has come to Australia a couple of times, and I always remember that I discussed the notion of four-word course reviews with him, and we played probably five holes, and he looked at me and said that Royal Melbourne West's was looks wide, plays narrow.
Yeah, that's a good one.
So he had talked about wanting to thread it down tight lines to carry hazards, to leave himself ideal lines of approach. Also recognizing the fact that if you just wanted to bump it around and shoot a risk-free 86, that you could do it pretty easily into the fat of the fairway, hole after hole after hole. So his version has always stuck with me. Always thought that was really smart.
It's a really good one. It's hard to distill the brilliance of RM West down into four words, but I think that's the beauty of a four-word course review, is it actually requires you to really think about the few elements that really make a course what it is in terms of character or whatnot. You know, it's easy. You know, it's one of those things like, can't think of who the author was, but, you know, wrote a letter and said to their recipient, I'm sorry, the letter would have been shorter, but I was rushed for time. Like, you know, it takes time to be concise. It's easy to be verbose, as I prove every episode on this pod.
Well, you were very concise with your brother, your mate's eccentric brother.
There you go.
And that gives the recipient of those four-word course reviews a little bit of license to expand upon that in their own way as well, which I really like about this sort of thing.
Yeah.
So,
mate, it's been good fun. I wanted us to get through these rankings, but I've been trying to think of the way that that we did that would be interesting rather than just reading rankings and beard pulling and splitting hairs on architecture. So it's been very good fun. And if you're a new listener to this podcast, most of these courses that we've kind of brushed on in this episode, we have full episodes on. So Royal Melbourne West, Royal Melbourne East, and the Composite, we've done episodes on. Kingston Heath, we've talked about Barnbougle Dunes in a couple of different episodes, one more generally about the merits and one really going into, you know, the play-by-play of Maddie's visit there late last year. We've done Victoria. We've done the three courses at the National, so Gunnamatta, Moona and Old together. New South Wales Golf Club, Royal Adelaide. We talked about St Andrews Beach in terms of the whole Mornington Peninsula outside the gates of National. We've done Metro with Lucas Michelle, who was a great guest. We've talked about the Lakes and a bit about its tournament pedigree. We have had an episode on Lonsdale as well. There's a few in this top 20 we haven't got to yet, but if there's things you've heard or if you might have missed those episodes previously, absolutely, please go back through our archives and have a listen. To the usual feedback that we get, yes, we need to do an episode on PK North. We've discussed that hopefully that'll be later this year. Yarra, I haven't seen post-Reno. King Island, I've never set foot on. So, yes, it's me holding us back on having episodes on those courses. We've actually, it's when you look at it, Maddie, and kind of harking back to the goals, I've felt a bit this year, you know, famously, if we talk about missed goals, like the fact that I haven't have done a lap of a pool this year, we talked about trying to do the 1st and 15th of every month, and I don't think we've done the 1st or 15th of any month. However, it's the 20th of March, and by rights, we should have put our 6th episode for the year out last week, 5 days ago. This is our 6th episode of the year, given that we decided Clates' New Year's Eve episode counted as Jan 1. So we're actually not as far behind on that goal as I thought we were. So if we can polish this one up and top and tail it and get it out pretty quick, we're actually not too far behind hitting the mark on that particular goal.
Yeah, and we've got a couple more that we can zip through in the next few weeks to bring the batting average up as well.
Indeed. I feel like we're probably overdue for some listener questions too.
They're always good fun. We always get a great batch of questions.
Yeah.
You got to be up for one of those.
All righty. As always, such good fun. And to all of our audience, thank you very much for listening. Really appreciate it.
Thanks for the reviews too, Scott. Really enjoyed listening to them. They lived up to the hype. They were great. Thank you. We'll be right back.